Hey, everybody, it's Tommy Canale, and welcome back to Before the Lights podcast, the show that tells you how they made their mark. Today, we're going to talk about a bootlegger and a gambling entrepreneur in Southern California in the 1920s through the 1950s. He's famous for the mind behind the Stardust Casino and Resort in Las Vegas and had an affirmation for organized crime, but was not a member of any mob family. He operated gambling ships off the coast of Los Angeles. He was known as the Admiral and Tony the Hat. Today, we tell the story of Tony Cornero. And listeners, you're in for a treat because this is one hell of a story with one crazy ending. Tony Cornero, as I said, was born Anthony Cornero Strala in an Italian village in the Piedmont region of northern Italy that was near the Swiss border in 1895. He came to America, basically San Francisco, after his father lost the farm. And I wonder if the term lost the farm actually came from this story due to his father losing it in a card game and a fire destroyed their harvest. His father died a few years later, and Tony's mother married Luigi Strala. Cornero used aliases of Tony Strala and Tony Cornero throughout his life. Before we get into all the stuff that he did, some things that get lost behind this story is in 1922, Tony Cornero was driving a cab. But in 1923, during Prohibition, he became a rum runner, and his clients included high-class customers and nightclubs. Now remember, Prohibition era. He used a shrimping business as a cover and started smuggling Canadian whiskey into Southern California with a small fleet of ships. One was the SS Lily, which could hold up to 4,000 cases of liquor in one trip. He would unload the liquor beyond the 3-mile limit into speedboats and take it to Southern California beaches, which easily avoided the United States Coast Guard. By age 25, Tony Cornero was a millionaire. Now, I just mentioned the term 3-mile limit, and I want to explain that for those of you that might be going, well, what is a 3-mile limit? It refers to the country's territorial waters for the purpose of trade regulations and exclusivity, extending as far as the reach of cannons fired from land, hence the term 3-mile limit. And I will bring this up several times throughout the story, so keep this in mind. In 1925, massive egos, bankrolls, I mean, the guy's a millionaire, collided, ending in beatings, intimidation, and murder. Shocker. Milton Farmer Page, who was called the King of Spring Street's Monte Carlo by a Los Angeles Times headline, killed the competitor Al Joseph and was freed after pleading self-defense. Page's brothers did raids. They stole liquor deliveries. And Tony and his brother Frank gunned down Walter Hesketh, who was Page's bodyguard, on March 28th, 1925. Their new friend was handsome Johnny Roselli, who might have aided, but was released from jail. Frank and Tony stood up to the questions and charges were dropped because the witness, here's a shocker, refused to testify. We're talking in this era, which I love these stories. The government, well, they decided to get involved in this story, and they took $213 that Tony had on him for the first installment against the IRS, claiming he owed $302,354 for illegal booze sales in 1924 and 1925. I see that. I mean, the guy's a millionaire, rum running, prohibition. And then we head into the year 1926. Coming from Mexico with around 1,000 cases of rum, Tony was arrested and sentenced to 2 years. Cornero jokingly said he had only purchased the liquor to keep 120 million people from being poisoned to death. People need their booze. On the way to prison by train, Tony escaped by jumping off, hopped on a ship for Vancouver, British Columbia, and hid there for several years. That was 1926. In 1929, Tony returns to Los Angeles and turns himself in. He could have already served the time that he was given instead of going through all this, but it is what it is. He was released in 1931 and started Ken Tar Installation Company. Once again, it's a cover-up for a large-scale bootlegging, which was raided. So, he went to Culver City, California, and started producing 5,000 gallons of alcohol per day. And you want to guess what happened? Yep, it was raided. But there was no evidence found of bootlegging, so it was released. Obviously, they were tipped off. After that, Tony decides to pack up and move to Las Vegas in 1931. And he purchased a 30-acre piece of desert land outside the city limits. He opened the Meadows Casino and Hotel, which was one of 7 licensed casinos in the Las Vegas area and is considered the earliest resort in Las Vegas, the Meadows Casino and Hotel. This was 10 years before the El Rancho and 15 before the Flamingo. It was located at Fremont and Charleston / Boulder Highway area. But the success of the Meadows Casino got the attention of Lucky Luciano, the boss of the Luciano crime family, along with Meyer Lansky. And they, shockingly, demanded a percentage of the profits. Tony refused, and the hotel was torched. Goodbye. He sold his interest and moved back to Los Angeles. In 1936, he opened a shipboard gaming operation off the Southern California coast. He was sailing in international waters, and he had hoped to run gambling without issues from U.S. authorities. He converted 2 large ships into luxury casinos at the cost of $300,000. Now remember, this is 1936, and he named them the SS Rex and the SS Tango. The SS Rex was the premier ship and could hold 2,000 people. It had waiters, waitresses, a gourmet chef, a full orchestra, and a gunman squad. It had a first-class dining room that served French cuisine exclusively. It also had a bingo parlor with 400 seats, and you could even bet on which hole a mouse would exit through. He was looking to make money in any way he could. He anchored these ships outside of that 3-mile limit off Santa Monica and Long Beach. Gamblers would pay 25 cents for a boat ride from Long Beach and Santa Monica to the SS Rex. So not only is he getting them to gamble, he's getting a quarter a person just to get them to the ship. The other boat, the SS Tango, there was an argument over the management of that ship with fellow officers. Tony risked his share of the ship on a single cut of cards and lost. And the reason I bring that up is you go back to when I said his father lost the farm in a card game. And now Tony loses one of his ships on a single cut of a deck of cards. I mean, you got to wrap your brain around this sometimes. The SX Rex had a sports and race wagering as well. October of 1939, the LA Zoo was in financial crisis. So Cornero offered them a day's proceeds from the SS Rex which was making around $300,000 per cruise to the zoo officials. They considered it, but the offer was declined. They obviously took a look at who they were dealing with and said, yeah, we don't want to get in bed with that. California officials were outraged of Carnero's floating casinos. State's Attorney General Earl Warren ordered a series of raids. And in 1946, Warren became governor of California and made his intentions clear that he would shut down these gambling ships. So he found Warren a way to circumvent that 3-mile limit. The state of California refigured the starting point off the coastline to determine the ships were in California waters. So the police and the Coast Guard boarded several boats and went out to shut down the casinos and arrest Carnero. But Tony the Hat, he wouldn't let him on board. And reportedly now, he turned on the ship's fire hoses when the police attempted to board and declared they were committing piracy on the high seas, which resulted in an 8-day standoff that ensued that was named the Battle of Santa Monica Bay. During these 8 days, Tony was tossing bottles of branding to the press that were in different boats, trying to get them on his side. After the 8 days, he surrendered and reportedly said the reason that he was giving up was he needed a haircut. Oh, this guy's story cracks me up. He eventually closed the casinos and then attempted to reopen land-based legal casinos in Los Angeles. But mobster Mickey Cohen stopped that, and Tony went back to Las Vegas. In Las Vegas, he contacted his friend Orlando Silvagni, who was the owner of the Apache Hotel, and made a deal to lease the hotel and rename it after that ship, the SS Rex. The Las Vegas City Council voted no for his gambling license due to his reputation. But one councilman then changed his vote and the motion got passed. But not so fast. A later vote by the council revoked the license and Tony closed the SS Rex. This was 1945, and Tony felt that 15 years had passed and the mob was not as prevalent. First off, big mistake. Dave Berman and Bugsy Siegel had more power and a reason why that license was pulled. So, what's Tony do? He moved again. Where? Beverly Hills, California. His plan was to invest in Baja California in Mexico. But on February 9th, 1948, two men came to his Beverly Hills house. Tony answers the door. One man gave him a carton and said, quote, "Here, Carnero, this is for you," end quote, and shot him 4 times in the stomach. Tony was severely wounded. Matter of fact, gravely wounded. And underwent surgery, but somehow Tony the Hat survived. April 28th, 1948, President Truman signed an act prohibiting operation of any gambling ship in U.S. territorial waters. So after Tony recovers, what does he do? He moves. Where? Yep. Back to Las Vegas. This guy's back and forth down Highway 15 or however it was back in the day, 93, whatever they named that road. His vision of Las Vegas was to have classy carpeted casinos and remove those old sawdust floors that casinos once had. So picture that. The Stardust originally started as the Starlight, but was later named the Stardust. This time, Tony began to build the Stardust Resort and Casino on a 40-acre piece of land on the Las Vegas Strip and filed an application with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission to sell stock. Once it was issued, he bought 65,000 shares for 10 cents each, giving him 51% majority control of all stock. So he sold the remaining shares and applied to the Nevada Gaming Commission, but was denied due to his bootlegging conviction and had some troubles with the SEC because he paid for the land with the stock that he illegally sold. So what does this all mean? Well, Tony invested money in a half-built casino that he could not operate. That's what it meant. So Tony goes, well, I guess I need plan B. So he goes to another friend, Milton Farmer Page, who we talked about earlier, who owned a Vegas casino to take over this project. Page agrees on one condition, that he'll be able to run the casino. And when I read this and started digging into it, it reminded me of the scene in the movie Casino, where Robert De Niro is out playing Lefty Rosenthal out by the pool, and the Kansas City people are trying to get him to run the casino. And he says, I don't want any problems. And there's not going to be any problems. He says, if I run the casino, I want to run it my way. And the guy says, you can run any way you want. It reminded me of that scene. I don't know if this is where it was taken from, but it's very coincidental. Let's head to 1955. Carnero made the first of several attempts to seek loans from Mo Dalitz, who was the godfather of Sin City. If you haven't listened to this podcast before, we've talked about Mo Dalitz. Mo Dalitz built a convention center, Sunrise Hospital, the Desert Inn, the Las Vegas Country Club. And he operated the DI, the Desert Inn, as I said. Dalitz's partner was Meyer Lansky. And if you remember, Meyer Lansky wanted a percentage of the profits from the Meadows before somehow it caught on fire and got torched. At first, Dalitz decides to lend Tony $1.25 million to be followed by a second and third loan, with Carnero using the unfinished Stardust as collateral. You see, people, Dalitz wanted the Stardust badly. He wanted control of that. Tony wanted $500,000 a month. Chump change. The loans totaled $4.3 million in 1955. But once again, Tony ran out of money just as that hotel was finishing. He also couldn't account for half of the cash, according to a March 2000 article by John William Tuohy that is featured on AmericanMafia.com. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes. The article is entitled Stardust in Your Eyes, Tony Carnero and the Stardust Hotel. Now we head to July 31st, 1955. And if Alan Geich is out there listening, I know he's laughing and smiling, because when I interviewed Alan on a previous show, and I'll put a link to his podcast in the notes as well, we talked about this Tony Carnero right then and there, which started the whole thing for me of diving into this guy's story. So here we go, July 31st, 1955. Tony told investors in a meeting in Las Vegas he needed $800,000 to stock the casino with cash and pay for food and beverage suppliers. So later that day, he went to the Desert Inn, which was right across the street from the Stardust, and played craps as he was a gambler. He was behind $10,000, and a waitress handed him a tab for $25 for food and drink. Carnero went crazy. He just went nuts over getting this tab. A waitress brings him a drink, which was a 7 and 7. It was his third drink of the night. He drinks it and fell to the floor dead. The glass disappeared in seconds. It was washed and never examined. A physician signed the death certificate immediately. His body was taken to a mortician and was in the ground in a Los Angeles cemetery 8 hours later with no autopsy report. Again, a physician signed the death certificate immediately. His body was taken to a mortician, and it was in the ground in Los Angeles 8 hours later. No autopsy report. You heard it correctly. His body was removed from the casino floor before anyone contacted the Clark County coroner or the Clark County Sheriff's Department. A coroner's jury in Los Angeles determined he died of a heart attack. Who was on the casino floor that night? You guessed it. Mo Dalitz, who was connected with the Cleveland Syndicate, who took control of the Stardust. The story goes, whether this is factual or not, that the cocktail waitress was allegedly sent to the Bahamas for a week's vacation at the Desert Inn's expense. Suspicious? You think? Jake the Barber Factor from Chicago moved in position as a Stardust new owner. And in 1958, the Stardust opened and became the largest hotel in the world. It became the model for casinos from that point forward. The Stardust was imploded in 2007 and was part of the Las Vegas Skim that was operated by Argent Corporation. Resorts World now stands where the Stardust once was. Tony Carnero is credited with the concept of putting slot machines in the hotel lobbies to attract guests. The Carnero family received no compensation for his 2 years of efforts to open the casino. This was the same for Bugsy Siegel's family. There was no money for Flamingo. But Dave Berman owned a quarter of the El Cortez before it was sold, and the monetary remains transferred to the Flamingo, and he also had interest in the Riviera too. Dave Berman died on June 16, 1957 from a surgery complication. The death listed, once again, as a heart attack. His daughter Susan maintained that he died was fortunate for the mob, being the Riviera was in the midst of a financial crisis that was caused by Gus Greenbaum. Gus and his wife were brutally murdered at their Phoenix, Arizona home, gangland style. Berman's wife, Gladys, was pressured to give up control of her husband's power with Flamingo and the Riviera. Gladys wouldn't do it. She died of an overdose 2 weeks later at age 39. You think that was a mob hit? Yeah, I'm thinking so. You don't want to give up control. We want you to give up control. 2 days later, she dies of an overdose. There was a cash settlement that was made eventually for monthly payments to the daughter, Susan Berman, for $4.3 million. Here's some interesting finds. There's a 1940 novel entitled Farewell, My Lovely by Raymond Chandler that's portrayed gambling ships off Southern California coast run by a gangster similar like Tony Carnero. It was made into movies, though. In 1942, it was entitled The Falcon Takes Over. In 1944, as Murder, My Sweet. And in 1975, as Farewell, My Lovely. I'll end with this. Tony the Hat Carnero is remembered for his tenacity and his leadership qualities. His arch enemy was Burton Fitz. And he said, quote, "He was a smart cookie, that little bastard," end quote. And that's the story of Tony the Hat Carnero, who operated gambling ships off the coast in LA, had a casino here in Las Vegas that was torched in the meadows, was the brains behind the Stardust, and just had this little suspicious death of a drink and dropped dead to the floor and end up in ground 8 hours later. I love that story of Tony Carnero. I hope you guys do as well. But before I go, don't forget to join the exclusive Before the Lights members group. Click the link in the show notes. It includes private video calls with former guests, a one-of-a-kind poker chip, extra content, and more. It's only $7.99 a month, and it's your way to support the show. There'll be a link in the show notes. That's going to do it for this episode of Before the Lights. I'm Tommy Canale, and until next time, everybody, a salute, a chin-chin.